Welcome to Today on Broadway for Monday, July 18, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway star's James Marino.
James, on Friday, what was scheduled to be just a nice, casual, quick 15-minute conversation for us turned into a deep, introspective, and revelatory hour-and-a-half-long chat with the wonderful Alexandra Silber, currently playing Zytel in Fiddler on the Roof on Broadway. It was a lot more than I think any of the three of us bargained for, but I really, really loved this interview. She was so open and so funny and so thoughtful and really talked about some very personal things in her life and in her career and two books that she's written. And it's one of my favorite interviews I've done in my entire career. We released the whole thing on Saturday as a special episode. But listeners, just in case you haven't gotten to it in your feed yet, we are going to play a little clip at the end of today's show. So stick around for that. But James, I know you feel very similar to I do. I know there were some exchanges that we had that really moved you as well, hearing Al's stories.
Yeah, she was really great. As you said, I didn't expect for us to get into more than just that she's released a new CD and she's got a book coming out, and it became much, much more than that. So it was a really great interview, and if you are a fan of Al's and a fan of Fiddler, you know, take a listen to it. Yeah. Let's get on to the news. So Jake Gyllenhaal did a fake on us.
Kind of. You didn't want to read the headline that I wrote for you in the script, James?
Jake Gyllenhaal, we just don't know how to quit you.
Do you get that reference?
I no? can't quit you.
Do you know what that is?
Brokeback.
There you go. Very good. Okay. Yeah, James, we let off our Friday show talking about Jake Gyllenhaal and speculated that maybe he would eventually carve out some time in his busy filmmaking schedule to bring Sunday in the Park with George back to Broadway with Anna Lee Ashford, since they are doing a benefit concert and a couple performances later this year. Well, apparently, if that is going to happen, it's beginning to look like we can rule out this coming spring for that transfer. It now appears that plans are moving forward for Gyllenhaal to return to the main stem in a revival of Lanford Wilson's 1987 play Burn This early next year. Originally, this production was rumored by Page Six back in April, and now the show, which appears to be directed by Michael Mayer, has released a casting notice late last week that indicated that performances would begin in February with a March opening and a June closing. So that kind of sticks in the realm of limited runs by A-list stars right around, the Tony season. James, I know you were not exactly a big fan of the show that Jake made his Broadway debut in back in 2015, but I do recall that you thought he acquitted himself fairly well on stage, and assuming he's still attached, this seems like a pretty juicy part and pretty juicy show for him to get back on Broadway in.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. That show that I've blocked the name of it out of my mind. I can't remember what it was.
Constellations.
But he was very good. It was just that the underlying property I thought it was an acting exercise. So let's move forward. Heidi Blickenstaff and Emma Hunton. Is that her name?
Hunting, it is.
Getting freaky in D.C.
They are. I'm trying to spice up our headlines this week, James. The wonderful Heidi Blickenstaff played her final performance in Something Rotten on Saturday, but apparently she will not be out of work for too long, as the title of show star will be leading the world premiere production of the new Tom Kitt and Brian Yorkey musical Freaky Friday at Arlington, Virginia's Signature Theater beginning in October. She will play the mother/daughter to the character played by Emma Hunton, who has replaced on Broadway in the original productions of Spring Awakening and Next to Normal, and has played Elphaba on tour and replaced Anna Lee Ashford, who we just mentioned, as Maureen in the off-Broadway production of Rent. Freaky Friday is a Disney theatrical production and is based not only on the two successful films, but also on the original novel by Mary Rodgers. And yes, that Mary Rodgers. So there's a lot of good musical theater connections in this property. If you are unfamiliar with Freaky Friday, it has become a very well-known and well-worn trope for movies, but Catherine and Ellie Blake are an overworked mother and her teenage daughter who magically swap bodies and have just one day to put things right again before mom's big wedding. The show will be directed by Christopher Ashley, the artistic director at the La Jolla Playhouse, where another production of the show – will play in January. No word if this cast will go out to La Jolla to do that one as well. And it will be choreographed by On Your Feet Tony nominee Sergio Trujillo. The book is by a woman named Bridget Carpenter, who has had a number of plays produced at some major theaters around the country, like The Public, Steppenwolf, Berkeley Rep, and more. But I know her as a writer and co-executive producer on a little television show called Friday Night Lights, which is one of my all-time faves. She also performed the same jobs on NBC's Parenthood and was the creator and showrunner for Hulu's recent event series, 11-22-63. So, James, between the track record of Disney Theatrical and the talent of the Pulitzer Prize winners Kit and Yorkie, I would have to imagine that unless this is a complete train wreck, we'll be seeing this one in New York fairly soon.
Hopefully. I'm really excited about that. Bridget Carpenter, that rocks.
Yeah. Wow. Were you familiar with her? Did you know who she was before?
Yeah. Friday Night Lights. I'm telling you.
It's a great show.
I've often wondered if Broadway or off-Broadway or somebody can pull off some sort of serial episodic performance. And
I think the only thing that really would fall in that category would be something like Newsical the Musical, or whatever they call it, where they kind of update stories, but it's not really serialized, but it's updated kind of regularly. But that's pretty interesting. I would wonder if a, you know, experienced TV writer could make something like that work. That's a pretty good idea, James. Let's get on that.
Alan Sorkin.
No way. He would never be able to get a script written fast enough to keep something up like that.
No. He'd have to write it, a year ahead of time. And
that's right. That's right.
I guess, you know, Angels in America sort of was that. But
things like Coast of Utopia and stuff like that. And did you say Alan or did you say Aaron?
I meant Aaron. Did I say Alan?
I don't know. I could have heard you wrong, but just in case, we know it's Aaron.
Aaron Sorkin. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
All right.
Okay.
This week's schedule, Privacy opens tonight at the Public.
You're sticking with the Privacy thing, aren't you?
It makes me sound intelligent.
It makes you sound something. But we've talked about this show a couple of times before, James, and tonight we're going to get a chance to see what the critics think as the Daniel Radcliffe-led play opens at the Public Theater. Created by playwright James Graham and director Josie Rourke, this piece of journalistic theater comes from London's Donmar Warehouse, where it played in 2014, and it looks into the complicated relationship that our society has with technology and data. In addition to Radcliffe, Rachel Dratch, DeAndre Aziza, Reg Rogers, and more, wanted whistleblower / treasonous traitor Edward Snowden makes an appearance in the show via a pre-taped video segment. So I am dying to hear how that goes. Apparently, he has a conversation with Radcliffe and he quotes some Tempest. So that should be really interesting. Also, we should note that friend of the show, Lindsay Jones, is the production sound designer. So good for him. James, I know you were hoping to get to see this one. Are you going to make it over to the Public for it?
I think it's this Thursday I'm going to see it.
Are you?
No, I think it's either this Thursday or next Thursday, but the wonderful Michael Dale, who is a reviewer for that website, Broadway World, are you familiar with
it? Yes, I am. They send me a paycheck twice a month.
Excellent. Michael, was it yesterday, the day before, a couple days ago, was seeing Privacy, and he checked in, and his check-in at the Public Theater said that the rumor was that when you checked into the Public that they used your check-in as part of the script that evening, that they added you in or something like that. So I'm interested to see what happens there.
Yeah, on the show page on the Public Theater's website, it says that you are encouraged to charge your phone before you come and to leave it on throughout the performance. So this is obviously not something Patti LuPone's in or anything like that. It's obviously got a much different approach because this is so much a work of the times. And it's, you know, like we've talked about before, it involves the real words of interviews they've done with a whole lot of people. So it makes sense that they would try something like that in Privacy / Privacy, wherever you stand on pronunciations.
Next up, I am going to be hard-pressed to get sympathy from you, Matt Timonini, from Orlando, Florida. But up here in New York, it's been very sticky and hot and humid. And while you may not feel bad for the everyday person, the folks performing at the Delacorte Theater in period costume, You got to feel for them.
Yes, absolutely. Sticking with the Public Theater, tomorrow night they will begin performances of their Shakespeare in the Park production of Troilus and Cressida, starring the likes of Corey Stoll, John Glover, Andrew Burnap, Ismenia Mendez, Sanjit De Silva, and more. Directed by Tony winner Daniel Sullivan, the show's official opening is August 3rd, and performances run through August 14th. James, I have to admit, I've seen a lot of Shakespeare. I've read a lot of Shakespeare. Troilus and Cressida is not one that I am all that familiar with. I know it's something about the Greek wars and something, but I don't know a whole lot about this one.
Nor do I, and I'm seeing it in a couple of weeks as well.
Okay, so once you see it, tell me all about it.
I will try.
Okay, good. And then finally on our calendar for the week is the opening for the return engagement of Motown the Musical, directed as it was originally by Charles Randolph Wright and choreographed again by Patricia Wilcox and Warren Adams. This new production features the current touring cast led by Chester Gregory as Barry Gordy, Jaron Muse as Marvin Gaye, and Allison Sims as Diana Ross. The show will play the Nederlander through November 13th. And James, I'm really interested to see how this does at the box office. It's been over a year and a half since the show originally closed on Broadway. As we've talked about before, it was still doing really well when it closed, and now it's coming back at the peak of tourist season. But as we've noted, some of Broadway's other jukebox musicals, like Beautiful or Jersey Boys, they haven't been doing all that well. So we'll see if this either continues that trend or it does really well and steals some of the ticket buyers away from those other shows.
I think it's going to really depend upon their marketing. You know, if they put some bursts on the poster and say new, better, lighter type of thing, maybe that'll work. But seriously, I think that this is really competitive right now with a lot of very good shows on Broadway. So it's tough for the jukebox musicals that have been around to get that excitement up. But maybe because Motown is here just briefly and for a limited engagement, and they've got such wonderful songs that the baby boomers love, and that's who's buying tickets.
Yes, it is.
All right. So in the recommendations.
Yeah, we've got a couple things. I wanted to end our first show of the week with some things I wanted to point you in the direction of. So to lead us off, on Friday, multi-platinum recording artist Josh Groban released a single version of the song Dust and Ashes from Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, which he'll be making his Broadway debut in beginning on October 18th at the Imperial Theater. James, I know a lot about this show's production history and the kind of unique road to Broadway that it had, playing under a tent at one point, and it's kind of immersive, but I don't really know much of the music all that well. And to be honest, with what I've heard from this song and a couple others, I don't think it's going to be my favorite score, but I really want to like this show.
Yeah, I do too, and I'm really interested to see how it's received and if Josh Groban's going to be able to cross over and bring that non-Broadway audience to Broadway for this. I'm hoping that it's a big success, because our little secret between you and me, don't tell anybody else, is that friends and family continue to ask me for Hamilton tickets. And I keep on telling them that I cannot get them Hamilton tickets, but get Great Comet tickets, because this is going to be the hard-to-get ticket. I think that Josh Groban's going to bring in some new fans. And this was a very, very popular show when it was in the tent in the Broadway district.
Yeah, I'm hopeful it does well. Yeah.
All right. Jeremy Jordan is singing West Side Story at the Hollywood Bowl.
He is. Now, a show that I do know the music very well for is West Side Story. And as we've mentioned a number of times, the Hollywood Bowl is hosting a two-night-only concert production of that show, starring Karen Olivo, recreating her Tony-winning role as Anita, and the aforementioned Tony nominee Jeremy Jordan as Tony. The first performance was last Thursday, and the second one is tomorrow night. And over the weekend, some videos of the performances started popping up online. I have yet to see any of Olivo, but she's done the show, so there are plenty of videos of her doing America out there. So while I love her, we've kind of got those, but we haven't really seen Jordan in this role before. And I got to tell you, James, I knew he was really good, but he's really impressive singing these songs. We'll link to some of them in the show notes, including Something's Coming, Maria, and Tonight, which he sings with his co-star Solea Pfeiffer, who's apparently a recent graduate of that school up north that I don't mention the name of. I know he's really busy shooting the Supergirl TV show, and as somebody who's seen every episode of that show, I hope it runs for years, but we definitely need more Jeremy Jordan singing on Broadway.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. All right. So next up, we are going to play a little clip of our discussion, hour and a half discussion with Alexander Silber. That's absolutely, we're going to play just a few minutes of it, and we'll have a link to it where you can get it in the show notes if it's not already in your feed.
You were in... it's still to this day probably my favorite straight play that I've ever seen on Broadway, and one of my favorite theatrical experiences of all time. And that was in,
oh my god,
I loved Masterclass that you did with Aww. Tyne Daly and Sierra Bogus, and I still go back to that. There is so much meat in that show that I wish I could have seen it 3 or 4 times and just been able to analyze it.
I'm very fiery. Are you? That's what my teacher says. I was making a little joke. I don't believe you can be a great artist without temperament. Neither does she. We're working on it. Everyone says that you had... I mean, have... great temperament. I'm hoping to get some from you, frankly. Am I saying the wrong thing?
Do something fiery.
Well, I can't. Not just like that. No one can.
Where is my footstool?
Well, I guess some people can.
First off, let's go back to it. It's a show about Maria Callas giving these very, very tough and difficult master classes to opera students. But mm-hmm. I have to feel like you're on stage with Tyne Daly. That's got to be a masterclass in itself.
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, I love that you're bringing up Masterclass, because that was the other character that was quote unquote
Perfect.
Sticky.
Yeah.
Sophie De Palma, I miss you like you stopped calling. you know, like a friend that just like suddenly lost your phone number. And oh, I loved this girl. Yes, it was such an amazing experience. First of all, it was my actual second job in America.
Wow.
And you know, sort of without question, a role and a show and a cast that kind of cradled me during a period of transition when I was coming back from the UK. And it started at the Kennedy Center, actually. And for many of us, it was just a really exciting Terrence McNally Festival that was being put on by the Kennedy Center, and a really wonderful project, a trilogy of Terrence McNally plays all about the opera. One of his early works, The Lisbon Traviata, Masterclass, and his latest play, Golden Age. And, you know, we were all sort of there together sharing a green room, and it was a really like wonderful out of town experience. a great time. And I think to answer your question directly, was it like a masterclass in itself with Tyne? Absolutely. I was familiar with Tyne, but not necessarily as familiar as I probably should have been. You know, I had no reference to her as a television personality. I'm not like
really? Okay.
Particularly, it was just, you know, the shows she was on were shows I kind of missed, if you will.
Yeah.
And, so my knowledge of her was, you know, oh my God, that's Mama Rose. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And one of our great theater actresses. And I think one of the beautiful things that I don't think any of these people would mind me sort of scratching the surface of is that when we were in Washington, every single member of our cast was really going through it. We just happened to have a moment where everybody felt extraordinarily raw and exposed and was grieving or having a moment of really profound transition. And when you have an experience like that, you kind of have one of two options. You can all isolate and just do your job, or you can really come together. And that the crucible of being out of town and sort of in pain together can create something very, very beautiful. And the latter happened, which is ultimately why I think it came to New York and had another life. And my connection with Tyne, even to this day, is probably, not even probably, she's the only real mentor I have artistically.
All right, Matt, why don't you get us out of here?
Okay, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can follow me on Twitter at BWWMatt, and subscribe to Some Like It Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thank you for spending your Monday with us. Welcome back, and we will talk to you tomorrow.